Welcome to the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I'm Trevor, and with me I have Megs and I have Josh.
Hello.
Buenos dias.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Yeah. Happy New Year. Mm-hmm.
We are doing this a little late. Things happen during the holidays.
Lots of stuff.
So we still want to do this, and we're going to do it, and then we'll get back to the last movie of our James Bond rotation.
Yes. And we wanted to wait till after January 6th to see there was another incident, but there wasn't.
So. No.
We wanted to get past the epiphany. Yeah. Well, there's that. Yeah.
Yep.
I just like to celebrate the
today in the news. Kamala did the speech or the eulogy for
Jimmy Carter.
Oh, Jimmy Carter.
Mr. Carter. Yeah. Yeah. She didn't do a bad job. I watched a little bit of it. Like, I don't know why the fuck I watched it. It was just like popped on the TV. I was like, all right, TV. I see what you're trying to do here.
Yeah.
It's those smart TVs.
Well, it was a stupid move on their part.
It was at the apartment complex that I was at today. In their lobby, they have.
Oh, I thought the funeral was there.
No. That would have been really weird.
That was pretty.
That would have been super weird.
But like, past like president
at 45th and Palmer, we are
Avenue?
Now. Yes,
Avenue?
45th Avenue, Palmer. Yeah. We are now proceeding with the burial and the eulogy of former President Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, not an Avondale, not a Maryville guy, but no. You know,
yeah,
you know, that's where his roots were somehow, some way.
He cared for the common man.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He did.
The Habitat for Humanity.
I heard that much like this next president or our next president, he was a DC outsider.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot
he was
common.
A peanut farmer. Yeah.
They had a lot in common. They built structures.
Sure. One actually did it from the ground up. Mm-hmm. The other had a little handout to help.
A hand up.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
It's a hand up.
Yeah. Yes. But neither of that is here nor there.
Because we're talking about Goonies, right? Remember Goonies when that happened? Huh? Aurora?
That was my favorite part.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mouth.
Yep. And if only Goonies were a Christmas movie, we would watch it during
that's right. So we're
going to
talk about Gremlins instead.
Yeah.
Gremlins is. It, at least it has a Goonie in it.
It does. And I believe that Chris Columbus did write the Goonies and Young mm-hmm. Sherlock Holmes. So in a way, we're Goonies tangent.
Practically doing the Goonies.
Yeah. Ipso stando.
Yep.
Ups and downsies.
Mm-hmm.
So for the Brown moment, I thought I'd talk about Chris Columbus. Just going to go over some trivia. I'm going to go through some trivia stuff that I had found on IMDb.
Can we answer these questions? Is that what you're saying? Or?
I'll put
would you like it in the form of a question?
Do you, well, these
who
are just
who is Christopher Columbus? First answer.
Sure. Okay. He is a director, a film director. Well, Christopher Columbus is different. Like Christopher Columbus? I'm not Italian, so I don't have that big affinity for him, but I know of him and what he did.
The Italians, they love him.
They taught us in school of his greatness. That's all I know. And I was like, there was boats. He got on them.
Boats.
Came here. There was three of them. Boom.
We all know it. That was the...
Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria.
Yep.
You think more people are going to know it from, the Boats and Hoes song?
Boats and Hoes.
Maybe.
That's how you teach children how to remember their boats.
Yeah, fancy fun songs.
It would have been cool if they had did that for us. And they were like, nope, you just have to do rhyme schemes.
Well, it's the same concept. It's fine.
With the script for Gremlins, it was originally meant to be a very dark horror film instead. The mother was decapitated, the family dog was eaten, and Gizmo was the one that turned into Stripe instead of there being a Stripe, a Mogwai in it, turning into a gremlin.
Yeah, I don't think that one would have been good.
It would have been more of like a B-movie.
I think you're going into Pet Sematary.
I think it would be fine.
You know, Cujo.
It would have a different legacy than it does now. And it certainly wouldn't be a Christmas classic.
No. It'd be like a Krampus, you know, like just fucking, here's children, let's fuck them up, you know.
Well, already it is a little bit like a Krampus. I mean, it's not a,
Not a one.
Well, the only fucking downer is Phoebe Cates in this whole movie. Like,
she's great though.
She's great, but it's like, yeah, my dad's feet were like dangling in there.
We just thought it was raccoons.
Just imagine directing that part. You know, you're like, okay, you're like, so here's, I know you read the script, but let's get deeper into this. You know?
That is a hell of a backstory to have for why you don't like Christmas.
I like that they had a little fun with it in Gremlins too.
They do. Yeah.
They do. They have a little fun with that.
How did that?
I think he goes like, come on, not again. Let's not do this.
He starts to tell another story and he's like, oh God, not another one. Oh. You know? I think that was about President. Wasn't it President's Day or something?
I think, yeah, it was like, it's not like all holidays. Oh God, like, not President's Day.
No, not President's Day.
Like she's fucking cursed. Yeah.
Nice. Chris Columbus considered directing the Spider-Man or Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. However, he decided to pass that up to direct Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Adjacent moves, I would say.
Yeah. You know. He was also responsible for writing, I think directing as well, Mrs. Doubtfire?
I'm not sure about that, yeah.
Yeah, I know he's connected to it.
I know he's directed. There's a lot of credits. He's got a lot of credits for that. He had the finger on the pulse of writing for the 90s and half the 80s and into the 2000s, obviously. So.
It says Columbus is a big James Bond fan, and he was crushed when Pierce Brosnan didn't get cast when he was offered the part during the making of Remington Steele. But they wouldn't release him from his contract. So when they worked together on Mrs. Doubtfire, Columbus told Brosnan he'd make a great James Bond, but he thought that ship had sailed. And then in 95, MGM called Columbus, telling him they were looking for the next James Bond, and Brosnan was one of the choices, so Columbus recommended him. It was his small contribution to the James Bond saga.
I'm going to take a second here. Since we're talking Bond... Okay. Instead of doing it later, what Bond movie are you going to do there, Max?
I'm going to do Dr. No.
Dr. No.
Yeah, I've never seen that movie.
That's the first one.
Really?
Yeah, Dr. No's the first one.
Wow, okay. Yeah. All right.
You're going to see the inaugural.
And it's a highly rated one.
It is actually, yeah. Like okay. It's a good one. I've seen it before.
Back to the Pierce Brosnan debacle with the...
Run by Fruiting.
When he wasn't able to get out of his contract for Remington Steele, that was a big deal back then. I was, of course, a child, and my mother was a big fan of this Pierce Brosnan on Remington Steele. I watched Remington Steele. I wasn't a huge fan of the show, but my mother was very upset that he would not be the new James Bond, and she was just like, this guy would be great as James Bond.
Yeah, well.
They really should let him out. She, of course, felt the same way when the
Magnum situation
happened, and Tom Selleck, her favorite actor, was unable to play. Although she loved Harrison Ford, she was picturing some little shorts and some long, long legs.
For some Indiana Jones.
That's not really like jungle attire, you know. I'm a shorts
guy. Don't you worry about it.
I'm a shorts guy, but hold on.
Don't worry.
Gremlins was Columbus's fourth script. Nothing new. It's sort of in the movie anyways. If you've seen it, it's a dark satire of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yep.
John Williams is frequently involved with Christopher Columbus as a composer for his movies. He is also the only American to have directed a Harry Potter installment.
Yates, the other one, I believe.
No, the only American.
One American.
He is the only one.
I'm saying Yates was one of the other directors.
What was his name? Yotes? Alfonso Cuarón.
Okay,
took over right after him, and I think he stuck through maybe the sixth.
Okay,
I think maybe he left on the seventh and eighth one, which was the Deathly Hallows. But I'd have to look.
He's like, I don't like dealing with teenagers. I like kids.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? That's also a feature of like of a Chris Columbus movie. Usually, kids who are underage
on an
adventure to find something mysterious or lost. That's all I really wanted to talk about. One last thing to leave you with: at one point, he was attached to direct the 2005 Fantastic Four.
Ooh, luckily, you got out of that piece of shit.
Yep. It probably would have been really bad for him, I think. Mm. Oh, that was just that was a little bit.
Because that was Fox, and Fox just didn't give a shit.
Yeah,
there was that keep the rights.
Yes.
Well, that was just to keep that. He wasn't going to direct that one. They were actually trying to make a real movie. And then they just made that one to keep the rights.
Then they just dumped, yeah.
I think they were looking at him to actually direct a real movie.
Yeah.
But in the, you know, they decided they couldn't come through with, they couldn't get a script they wanted. They couldn't get anything together they wanted. Yeah. So they just made that little crappy movie just to keep the rights. And I do kind of feel sorry for those poor actors who thought this was their big break.
Three of them, good. I like the everybody except for Alba. Alba's pretty.
That's not the movie.
Fantastic Four.
No, the Keep the Rights movie was earlier. That was in the 90s.
No. That one. No, you're talking about the 2000 one.
The 2005 one.
Yeah, but the 2005 one was not a Keep the Rights one.
Yes. Yeah.
It was too, because that was like time.
They actually wanted to make the movie. They thought that was great.
Maybe it was the Silver Surfer one.
No.
I think the Silver Surfer one is the one that they had to make in order to keep the rights.
They had to make the Silver Surfer one. Yeah. I don't know if that was the rights. They were contractually obligated to make
I'm just saying.
I thought it was
in order for Fox to be able to keep the rights. I thought that was it, and there was also the same reason why they did the next Fantastic Four with Miles and fucking
Michael B. Jordan. Yeah.
Oh, they made that another one?
Yeah, because that was also a reason why they had to make that, or they made that one so they could keep
those
the rights.
Those were just all just no, yeah. these horrible movies. They just,
but that's the thing. They
that's
had,
unfilmable.
I mean, each one had its own thing, because everybody minus Jessica was pretty perfect for casting, but not, you know, whatever. But I like the other three were great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other ones, but the movies were shit. And then in the newer one, Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan's probably the weakest link in my opinion. He does some good stuff, some bad.
And Jamie.
But then you got Jamie Bell.
Yeah.
Jamie Bell's the fucking Academy Award winning guy.
I love Jamie Bell.
You know, and then the girl was that Mara.
Rooney. She was a Rooney.
Which one?
I think it's.
The pretty one or the weird looking one?
Weird looking one.
The one who ruined Juno, or the one who didn't ruin Juno?
I think the one who didn't ruin Juno.
Kate Mara and Rooney Mara. Those are the Mara sisters. But I always get confused with the other Rooney. Yeah, because there's a chick whose last name is Rooney.
And then you had Toby Kebbell was Dr. Doom, and I love him.
Oh yeah, he was great. He was great as Dr. Doom.
I don't know about this movie.
Yeah, really? It was 2005.
Yeah, it was literally what he's saying. They were like, we need to fucking keep this fucking shit.
It wasn't great. Like, it wasn't great. It was a Marvel movie.
Who's the dad?
X-Men. X-Men was the biggest thing that was Marvel and Blade.
Wait, that was the 2005 one? Was
Mara? 2015
was Mara. 2015
was
Mara. Yeah.
Mara was 2015. That's the one I don't. Okay, I did not know that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, that was 2015, yes.
Yeah.
That was not good. That one was not good either. There were some cool scenes and some cool character points, but overall, it was like, to me, it fell apart.
Well, everything else.
Well, that was a lot of superhero talk.
Yeah, it was. Because
we don't get to do it very often, so we're going to talk it more often.
Yeah.
The only thing that, I tell you this all the time, the one thing that differentiates a good and bad superhero movie is you need a great villain in there.
You gotta have a good villain.
Otherwise, you're fucked.
Yes.
Yeah.
Original Spider-Man, Willem Dafoe,
fantastic. Great.
Superman, Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
Superman, Gene Hackman. Uh-huh. You know?
Hell, Superman 2.
The original Joker, 1988 Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. You know?
Yep.
If you don't have that, you're fucked.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's enough about superhero movies for today. Let's talk about Gremlins.
Let's talk about some Gremlins.
We will. Right after this. What is the Amateur Movie Review Hour? Before we began our podcast, the three of us curated a list of approximately 100 movie genres. We then fed that list to a magical random generator that we use to provide us with a movie genre. The three of us take turns choosing movies to watch that fit into the chosen genre. We then watch that movie and attempt to return bi-weekly to review and discuss that movie. The only movies that we have banned are Marvel and DC movies from the past 15 years. I am not a professional movie reviewer. I just love to watch movies and then review those movies with my friends and you, my fellow screen fiend. Okay, if you didn't know, this episode's movie is going to be about Gremlins. The writer was Chris Columbus, and the director was Joe Dante. Actors Zach Galligan, Phoebe Cates, Hoyt Axton, Holly Holiday, and Francis Lee McCain. Once again, Christmas horror movie in the summer. So June 8th, 1984. I think there's just a thing with the movies. We're like, okay, we're going to do winter movies during the summer.
Yeah.
And horror winter movies during the summer. Because, I don't know, a correlation of like chills and being indoors.
Well, I think that's how you sold it in Hollywood. You're like, hey, I got this idea for a movie. It's going to be a little dark. They're like, okay, go ahead. And they're like, okay, well, yeah, we'll do this, but it's going to be not around Christmas, because we want this to be about cheer and jeer.
True. You want to save the family Christmas movies for actual Christmas.
Exactly. Remember Cheers and Jeers? Uh-huh. Out of the, what was that, TV Guide, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The runtime is 106 minutes. And this movie was chosen because we wanted to do something that was Christmas themed. So that's why. And it's just great. Like, I've seen this movie many times when I was younger. Like, it finally hit me that her whole backstory was completely dark.
Yeah.
To take kids to go see, but they don't get that until you're 15, 16, 17. You're like, oh, jeez.
Well, no, because you're living in the world of fucking, like, random gremlins doing random gremlin shit.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a big deal back then. I mean, we watched Poltergeist when I was even younger than this. So it was that kind of, or I guess around the same time we were probably watching it. But because we watched Poltergeist when it came out on HBO, which was probably like the summer before this came out. Okay. And, you know, my grandparents took us to see this at the theater and were really like, they thought it was a bunch of cuddly little, you know, they had no idea what was going to happen and they were not happy about it. And we saw it at the drive-in. It was the first drive-in movie I ever saw. And of course, then they started doing PG-13 after this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That kind of
sneaking it in, dude.
Yeah, that kind of made the news. That made it even bigger. Everybody wanted to rush out and see why this, you know, why are they talking about changing the rating system because of this movie? Yeah. You know, like, what's going on? So
it's because they were trying to push sex ed.
Yeah. And you know why I think that they released it so early?
Why?
Because you know what the big toy was that Christmas? It was Gizmo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Egg. Nice marketing.
Yeah, Gizmo for Christmas. Yeah.
That makes much more sense.
Was he
now
animatronic? Did the eyes like move and shit?
I think some of the more expensive ones did. We just had a basic Gizmo.
I'm pretty sure I had a basic Gizmo too. Uh-huh.
I didn't have one. I had an Alf and a Teddy Ruxpin.
Oh, I had
telling
one of those
his tails
too.
With his weird animatronic mouth moving.
I also had a Teddy Ruxpin.
I was down in Bear Gorge hanging out with Luke the Flute and Peter the Panda.
Well, I didn't know.
We had
know
a good old time. I just I made all know that up. Yeah, don't worry about it.
All right. Teddy.
I don't know if he had any friends. I know that Winnie the Pooh friends, but
yeah. If
anybody, listen, comment this shit if you listen to this. If you know, without Googling it, if you know any of Teddy Ruxpin's friends from his show, give me some comments. Give me some feedback.
Oh,
I'm not going to look it up.
I never watched his show.
Yeah,
I just wanted the thing that talked. I thought that was the coolest thing.
That's what
thing.
I had. Yeah. I had that. It was like a tape deck in the back of it. Yeah,
I had it. I just didn't. All I cared about was it was the newest technology out there. I didn't care about this weird show that people watched.
Oh, yeah,
Teddy Ruxpin immediately corroded in the back, and he didn't work pretty early on.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still play tapes, I think, on him.
Did you have animals that lived? For fuck's sake.
Okay. That's enough, sir.
Hey.
Too far.
What was the other
So thing? I had that, and I had an Alf. My Alf was like, it had the button. He's like, I'd like to eat your cat. I'm from Melmac. So I took that thing out. And as a young man, I was hiding pornography in there.
Like magazines or DVDs?
No, well, you couldn't. No.
He was not. 19, not
you're talking like 1990 or something like that. Right. But it was like, it was like folded up like centerfolds or something like that.
Sure, yeah.
You know?
Wow.
What?
Poor little Alf.
I'm not fucking doing anything with the Alf. He's not like
he was cucked.
He's not the pillow. He's not the cracker in the center. I'm not fucking like tributing him or anything like that.
He's just watching from the corner.
No, I put his face down. In a way, far away.
Nowhere near me.
This is not for you to watch, Alf.
And then, like,
you hear
him go, like, I like cats. I'm like, what the fuck happened, man?
I took that thing out.
You're like, me too,
I took
too,
the batteries
Alf.
Out. I smashed it into a million pieces. I meant to say pussy.
Ooh, that would have been creepy. I'm like, yeah. Ooh.
I'm like, well, I guess we're friends, but.
Well, you guys just want to jump right into our review?
Let's jump on in.
Oh, that's twisted. That nail sucks. There we go.
The Christmas-themed movie begins with a shot of a metropolitan alleyway, assumably New York. There is a blue neon sign with Chinese lettering. Rand Pelcher, an inventor who is played by Hoyt Axton, narrates as he walks Chinatown looking for a present for his kid. Rand questions the young Chinese boy about the appearance of Mr. Wing's store.
Do you feel like him and like Cliff Clavin were just like parallel, you know? Like they're very similar, like kind of know-it-alls, but you're just like, all right, I'll listen to your story. You know what I mean? Like just that, like, you're like, okay, you're a knowledgeable person. I can, you know? He's like, let me tell you about this. This is called the Doom Buggy right here. Mm-hmm. Here's what it does. Like, oh, his breakdown of things was great.
I knew who he was. I didn't know who Cliff Clavin was back then.
Oh, really?
But okay. I knew him because he was like a country guy. You know, you saw him in a lot of stuff back then.
Right, like Dukes of Hazzard.
Okay, all right. That makes sense. Once inside the store, Rand takes a gander at the wares that are for sale. Mr. Wing smokes a pipe watching Rand peruse the goods. But before Rand makes a purchase, he wants to sell Mr. Wing the bathroom buddy, a one-stop device for all your hygienic bathroom needs.
And Megan, what movie is that coming later?
Oh,
Horrible Bosses 2.
That's right.
The bathroom buddy or the shower daddy?
Yes. Has all the stuff. All the stuff you need.
Want to be clean? This is how you do it.
While he's making his pitch, he hears animal noises coming from deeper in the store. Under blue light in a dark corner, Rand spots the Mogwai, voiced by Howie Mandel. The Mogwai begins to sing, and it is cute as fuck. Rand wants to buy the Mogwai. Mr. Wing denies the sale. The creature demands a great amount of responsibility, says Mr. Wing. He could not part with the Mogwai no matter how much money Rand throws at him. The grandson tells Rand to wait outside. Very shortly, the grandson is outside selling the Mogwai to Rand. The scene then switches to a slow-mo shot as the grandson tells Rand about the three rules. No sunlight, no water, and most importantly, no eating after midnight.
So when I watched this younger, I'm like, that all makes sense. As an adult, I'm like, this is fucking stupid.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, how does that, what?
Why?
It's just the things that parents, you know.
It's just that thing that they know.
No sunlight. They're sunlight sensitive or whatever, you know, blah, blah, blah.
It's the after midnight because it's always after midnight.
I get the after midnight, don't eat, don't feed them or whatever, but no, the water, the sure. Multiplying by water?
No, the water's fine. It's the don't feed them after midnight. It's always after midnight. And there are so many time zones that just does, that didn't make any sense.
Well, that, yeah.
And when do you start feeding them?
Sure.
Because you're after midnight. When are you allowed to start feeding them again?
You only feed them between 1 to 4 on lunar calendars. And, yeah. You know what would have been creepy, though? If he did the dark version where the Gizmo is the bad one the whole time, but he's still humming that song the whole time. Oh,
sure, that would be creepy.
Just fucking like, oh my God, that'd be terrible.
A little like, just like an off key, like,
yeah,
just one note that's off key. Like, that'd be a little disheartening.
Yeah.
Or it like shifts into like a joke, like darker, like
sure,
like growl or something like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We then cut to Kingston Falls the day before or some days before Christmas. A radio DJ does his ramp up to a Xmas song that plays while the opening credits are shown. We get some intercut shots around town, kids snow fighting, then off to school. The sheriff abuses his power to get a free tree. Someone tries to start their V-dub bug. Billy Pelcher is having trouble with his bug again. The engine is steaming. Mr. Futterman, played by Dick Miller. Oh, that's who Dick Miller is. That's his mom, right? Frances Lee Miller.
Oh, Frances, yeah. Because yeah. I looked her up because
Frances Lee McCain.
I'm quite a bit older than she is. She was only in her, I think, 30s when she did that.
Okay.
Or maybe early. Maybe,
oh, you're talking about how everybody looks way older, younger now than it was 25 years ago, 30 years ago?
The dad is about... Yeah. the dad's 4 years younger than I am right now. He's a year older, 2 years older than Josh.
He looks like he's in his 60s.
He died just a few years later. You know, like less than a decade. He died like, what, 6 years later?
I'm not surprised. I'm sure that I would guess, and I'm probably wrong, that he liked to drink and eat and smoke.
Yeah. There were certain scenes where the mom, I thought the mom was the son and vice versa because they had the exact same hair, like the weird haircut. Like yeah, they'd be in the kitchen and I didn't know which one was the mom and which was the son.
Oh, know where you get your hair from,
that
Billy.
That was that weird casting where I should be able to tell the difference between the son and the mother in certain scenes.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Futterman offers Billy a ride into town, and he tells Billy that he's a big fan of Billy's comic strip writing. And Billy's dog is named Barney. Billy is off on foot at his, So Billy's running off to his job at the bank. He says hello to certain fellow townspeople at the bank. Barney is leashed to the underside of Billy's teller station at the bank. He puts his nameplate upside down, attaches on his clip die, and signs a petition for Kate, who is played by Phoebe Cates. The petition is to stop Mrs. Deagle from taking Dory's pub.
Kiss my grits. When I was little, I didn't know that was Flo. I watched Alice all the time, and I did not recognize her because she was just playing such a mean old lady.
Nice.
And she was doing the same thing at the same, you know, it was the same time she was still doing Flo the Yellow Rose, her spinoff series.
Okay.
But I did not recognize her. Polly Holiday, didn't recognize her.
Oh, that's who Polly Holiday is.
That's
okay,
Flo.
Okay. All right.
From Alice.
Yeah, I've not seen it.
You've never seen Alice?
No.
Come on. Come on. Linda Lavin just died.
When did that come out?
Alice just died. Linda Lavin.
What decade did that come out?
The same decade I was born. It was quite... But, I mean, Mel's Diner is right here in town. It was set here in town.
I didn't even know that.
Filmed here in town, but
it was set in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. This is the picture show everybody.
It was based on the movie. Mel's Alice Diner. Doesn't live here anymore.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've never seen that movie.
Oh my God.
All right, okay.
Everybody's gonna start watching Alice.
Nope, no one's gonna watch Alice.
I am going to open up my notepad.
The great Linda Lavin just died, last week? The same day as Jimmy Carter or right around there.
Alice.
She was the star of Alice. She was a great actress, first wife, or maybe second wife, but first wife of, what's his name from, oh gosh. He played Archer's stepfather, and he was married to Archer's mother on Archer.
Burt Reynolds?
No.
Oh, I know who.
Ron Liebman?
Yeah, Ron Liebman.
I remember the character. I see his face.
He also played Rachel Green's father on Friends.
Oh.
And he was around forever. Like, he was an actual actor. He did a lot of movies, but that's what most younger people would know him from.
I'm confusing him with, what's his butt? Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds was on the show, too.
Oh, Tom Selleck was on the show. Tom Selleck was on Friends.
Oh, I know, but Burt Reynolds was on Archer.
Oh, yes. That is true.
And he did have Jessica Walter. He was involved with Jessica Walter, who was Ron Liebman's real-life wife.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Mrs. Deagle has been taking a bunch of real estate from the town folk. Kate and Billy have a will-they-won't-they moment. Now, a flustered Mrs. Deagle, played by Polly Holiday, stomps down the road towards the bank. Back at the bank, Billy spots Mrs. Deagle coming for him at the bank. Mrs. Deagle is stopped by Mrs. Harris, who asks for an extension on their rent mortgage? I think it was rent. But Mrs. Deagle is a damn capitalist who is all about the stacks. She is not nice.
I think it's the mortgage. The bank. Because she wanted her to talk to the bank to see if they could get the mortgage.
Mrs. Deagle, now inside the bank, yells at Billy that Barney broke her imported Bavarian snowman. Billy offers to pay for the damages. But the mean old lady doesn't want his money. She wants his doggo. No, not Barney. She threatens to have the pound take care of Barney. Or rather, she could do it herself by putting Barney in the dryer. Spin cycle, high heat. Barney doesn't like the sound of that shit. And having untied himself because he's a cool-ass dog, he leaps up out of the counter barking at Mrs. Deagle. She falls on the ground where Barney has grabbed her coat sleeve, shaking his head back and forth. The bank manager and Judge Reinhold scold Billy. I fucking completely forgot that he was in this movie.
I did too.
Like, I was like, oh, Jesus. Like, it's really there just to insult Billy and tell Billy he's... Yeah, shit, piece of shit.
He's there to be the like, smarmy guy. Yeah. That's just like, ah, I'm trying to get your girl, and I masturbated to her in the last movie we were in together.
It's all continuity, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Deagle insults Billy's dad. Feigning heart issues, Mrs. Deagle is a little witch as she threatens Barney again. At Dory's pub, Billy is showing off his artwork to a patron when Judge Reinhold arrives to make fun of the almost unemployed Billy. Judge attempts to hit on Kate. Too bad she's an expert deflector. And just a dang good person. Cut to Billy arriving home to the Pelcher house. Inside, a pair of swords hang next to the front door. When the door shuts, one of the swords falls to the ground. Lynn, played by Frances Lee McCain, is in the kitchen watching It's a Wonderful Life on a little tiny TV. It's a small, like, portable TV. It's like the one that's like, this is my portable TV that I take around the house with me.
That's what we did back
I know,
then.
I know.
We had tiny TVs that we kept in the kitchen.
That's
or...
a kitchen TV.
And well, that... tiny is like the size yeah. of a small air fryer.
Yeah, those were those portable ones. We didn't have one of those because those were... more expensive because they were more portable, and I think they even had radios in them.
Sure.
And so I think my grandmother had one in her kitchen so that her husband could watch the news in the morning.
I think they called it the TV buddy.
Yeah. We had a bigger one than that, which was also a very small black and white television that we kept in our kitchen. Mm. And I think that was just for the housekeeper to watch while she ironed. Because we were not allowed to watch TV while we were in the kitchen.
Her novellas.
Yeah.
Billy tries to help his mom in the kitchen. So he tries the egg cracking device. And it just smashes eggs. Doesn't do anything. Mother and son are catching up just as Rand arrives from the road. He hangs the swords up again because he came in through the front door and shut it. After greeting his wife and son... Rand hands over the Mogwai gift to Billy. It has to be open now. Billy makes a couple of wrong guesses. Once the lights have been dimmed, Billy removes the gift wrapping off the wooden cage. When the top is open, Billy along with Barney are startled at the movement. Then the Mogwai reveals himself. This little thing, fucking so cute. If you haven't seen it, you must see it. It is cute.
Adorable.
Yeah.
And sweet.
Oh, yeah.
So sweet-natured.
Yeah. Billy wants to know its name. Rand says he calls him Gizmo.
Because his dad invents gizmos.
Yes, yeah. Lynn wants to take a pic as the young man and Gizmo cuddle. The bright flash of the camera scares Gizmo into Rand's arms. Rand explains the three rules. No sunlight, no water, no meals after midnight. Gizmo and Billy are in Billy's room. Gizmo is singing the notes Billy plays on a keyboard. Gizmo sings a song. Billy follows on keyboard. And then Billy uses a mirror to play with Gizmo. But the flash of the reflection from the light scares little Gizmo into a small trash can. When Billy rescues him, he's got a little cut on his head. Then, in the bathroom, Gizmo has to remind Billy about the lights.
Lights, lights.
Billy places Gizmo on the edge of the sink. That was not a good one. He just fell over, and you're going to put him on the edge of the sink where he could fall into the toilet probably
and
get
wet.
Like,
you see these guys who are like, they mean well, these dads. They put their kids like right next to the street, you know. Yeah. Like they're always doing silly things. He's just a typical dude who doesn't know how to safely place his little.
He's a 19, 20, 21, at least 21, right? Because he was drinking. The bar, was it 21 at that time?
Oh, it doesn't matter. 18. It was 19 back then, so I don't think it really
might have been 18.
It was probably, and different states back then had different rules, but it was probably not 21 right around there because it was 82.
Okay.
Probably grandfathered.
Okay. Gizmo's on the edge of the sink while Billy's looking for a bandage. And then Gizmo, Barney, and Billy sleep in Billy's bed. The next morning, the Peltzer Peeler Juicer explosion showers Billy with juice and pulp. Pete, the tree kid, played by Corey Feldman, drags a Christmas tree in the foyer of the Peltzer house. Upstairs, Gizmo is watching TV, something old, but he's imitating the racing that's going on in this old movie.
That Corey Feldman, though, quality kid.
Yeah, yeah.
He got jobs because he deserved them.
Yeah, I could see why he was in Goonies after this.
Stand By Me.
Yeah.
He also is a strange young child who goes and hangs out in an older boy's bedroom while the older boy changes his clothes. And it's,
back then,
we didn't think that was strange. We really didn't. Kids used to go over to the older neighbors' houses and just kind of hang out and bother them. And nobody thought anything of it. But when some kids got molested, it was like, hey, let's stop this.
Yeah, or at least get to know them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sometimes it's the getting to know them part that's the problem.
Well, yeah.
That's what that song's about.
Yeah.
Which one?
Getting to know you.
Ooh.
Getting to know all about
you. Did you notice that Nicky Catt is also in this movie?
He is. He's a child.
The great actor Nicky Catt, who is also in The Burbs with Corey Feldman, playing Corey Feldman's best friend.
Yep.
I did not know.
He's just one of the children at school.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I probably saw Nicky Catt, but I don't know that I saw Nicky Catt.
Yeah.
Can we say possibly greatest childhood career for Feldman?
I would say childhood career, sure.
I'm talking six hits at least.
He had a good run until he got really weird. He had a great run because you had this, you had Goonies, you had Stand By Me.
I'm talking film, not show.
Yeah, those not are like, all film.
That's what I'm saying. I'm talking film.
I mean, what is that going to be like? He was great on Mork and Mindy.
Well, I mean, you can compare it to what's his name on fucking...
Oh, Little Opie?
Little Opie.
No, he wasn't a very good actor, though. He was fine, but...
Wasn't he on Lassie, too?
No, that was
another little ginger boy.
Timmy, whatever that kid's name was.
Anyways, I'm starting a thing that says Corey Feldman, best child actor ever.
I wouldn't say best child actor. I'd say he was a very successful child actor.
Best child actor.
But and he was good in Goonies. He always emoted a little too much, and then he just kept doing it. There are some other kids who are fantastic. Look at what's his name from Rushmore, the little boy, the little blonde boy. That was one of the best child actors I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, but what did he do as a child?
He didn't get a lot because he was a great child actor and he grew up too fast.
Frankie Muniz.
He's terrible. Okay.
No movies.
I'm fucking around.
But they are making a new Malcolm in the Middle. They're bringing the gang back together.
I don't know if I'll be fine. Watch that.
I'll check it out. It's a good cast.
Have fun. Are they bringing back Cranston?
Everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is Cranston going back to that?
Money. What else is he doing?
Making a lot of shit.
Horrible movies?
No, he makes
well
movies.
Residual from
no,
fucking
that Judge show is
Bad.
Supposed to be pretty
oh,
good.
Oh, that too. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that. I haven't seen that show either. Mainly because it's on a channel I don't have.
He took the hit for Godzilla and he died in that movie. So
yeah, I wish he had a better role in Godzilla than what he did. Like I still like Cranston. Total Recall sucked.
Cranston was always better on TV.
Yeah,
he was great on King of Queens. He was great on Seinfeld. He was great on Malcolm in the Middle.
King of Queens.
Yeah, he was the neighbor. He played their neighbor.
I have forgotten. I didn't watch a whole lot of King of Queens, though. Just what was syndicated during my high school years, because I'd ditch and get high and watch King of Queens.
I'd watch Eureka's Castle.
Oh, good one. Good
early
one.
In the morning. Don't know what that show was ever about, but it was entertaining.
I don't know either. Weird things in Eureka, right? They just show up in Eureka.
I loved that show.
No, not
that
Eureka's
show.
Castle.
That was a fucking
child show.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Ooh. It's a long time.
Are you having a brain aneurysm?
Is that like a game show one?
No.
No, what was?
It was a child show with puppets and shit. Now the gears are
going. Now I think I remember.
You're thinking of Fraggle Rock, dude.
No. Okay.
What was it called?
I didn't watch it very often or at all.
Eureka's Castle.
There's only one season. More than likely, I did watch it.
It's fucking pivotal, man.
I don't remember.
We're gonna have to. That's the next thing I'm gonna recommend is us watching the entirety of Eureka's Castle. And then our fandom, you can fucking watch it too, fuckers.
When Billy introduces Gizmo, Pete is astounded. And then Gizmo sings on Billy's drawing desk, where he keeps a jar of water with brushes, and then Pete clumsily knocks that jar of water onto Gizmo, who starts screaming. And then Gizmo's back begins to bubble. Suddenly, 5 small furry balls shoot from Gizmo's back onto the nearby desk. Billy and Pete look on as the small balls grow into a small Mogwai. Billy now has 6 Mogwai. Pete is not as entertained as Billy about the new additions of the Mogwai. Gizmo is sad about all the new additions to the group.
His children. He's very disappointed. He's not happy with.
Yeah. No, not at all.
He's like, these fucking guys, I could already tell. They're going to be dicks.
Billy then finds Rand in the basement working on a playing card invention, some dealer or dispersal type of thing. He wants to ask his father questions. Instead, Rand wants to talk about his new tweak to the bathroom buddy. Billy tells Rand about the extra Mogwai. And Rand sees dollar signs. Stripe, the leader, spits at Barney after Rand says the Mogwai could replace the family dog. The new Mogwai are causing some major ruckus. It's cute right now. Everyone is sleeping peacefully. A calm before the storm. Barney whines. Billy finds Barney outside wrapped in Christmas lights hanging from the eaves of their house. And then Stripe does something in a mischievous way. Like, I think he smiles or looks around.
It's like a little cackle. Like,
ooh, yeah.
He was constantly doing like a little cackle.
Yeah. In the kitchen.
Is that what that's called? What would that be called?
Yeah, that's a cackle.
I think it's like, that's more of a cackle.
Do it again. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
But it's a version of a cackle, I think.
Yours is like, I don't know, that's like a heavy, weird breathing.
Oh, yeah. It's a heavy breathing then. That's what he's doing.
Just doing heavy breathing, okay.
It's like what fucking, what was the fat cat in Inspector Gadget? What he would do. Was his name Fat Cat?
I don't know.
That was Heathcliff.
Yeah.
Like, that's the show called. It's called Heathcliff.
Heathcliff,
he's our man. No, I don't remember the song, but that was kind of how the song went.
Yeah, and had the show. Yeah, and his white cat girlfriend.
Yeah, she was sexy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know the name of the cat though.
I don't remember it either. I thought I did.
Claw.
Mm-hmm.
It was his cat.
Oh.
May have been cat.
Let's say Meowser.
Oh, I think it was Meowser.
It might have been Meowser.
Oh shit!
I think it was Meowser.
All right, we'll come back to this. Continue, sir.
But in the kitchen, Lynn, Rand, and Billy discuss how the event could have happened. Rand swears he locked the door. Billy believes Mrs. Deagle is responsible for the attempted dog murder. Lynn doesn't want anyone to jump to any conclusion, so she calms everybody down.
Or a conclusion. You don't want those either.
The Peltzer coffee machine makes Lynn and Rand laugh because it's just pushing out sludge. The next morning, Pete is leaving school as Billy arrives. Mr. Hansen, the science teacher, is going to examine Gizmo. The elementary science teacher is going to examine Gizmo and give his expert opinion on what this is.
Well, don't forget, he was also the science teacher in Super 8. Who was...
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was like, a junior high?
Nice.
He was an actual scientist. Nice. Yeah.
But they brought him into the bunker of Area 51. Yeah.
Like, I've got this. I teach junior high science.
He just travels around teaching young children some really major science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Billy shows him what water does to Gizmo, Mr. Hansen is very excited. Billy lets Mr. Hansen keep the new Mogwai. And I thought here... that Gizmo was the one that was kept because of the pattern.
No, it
on
was
their
the
head.
It was googly eyes, wasn't it?
No, I don't think it was googly eyes, wasn't it?
I don't remember. I thought it was Gizmo, but
because there was only a few that kind of stand out. It was googly eyes, Stripe, and I think one had like a weird like calico pattern that was interesting or something.
Yeah, maybe.
But the cat was Mad Cat. It was not Mad Meowser.
Cat. Now, who's Meowser?
M dot. There is no Meowser.
There's a Meowser somewhere.
I don't know. Meowser is apparently a combination of Bowser and a cat. So if you're into that, there it is.
Well, now I have
interesting
Google
Fury that. Ideas. Not Fury. Furry.
Furry.
Or Fury, however you want it. But you can dress up as a cat slash reptile that fights Italians.
Maybe it just sounds like it should have been a thing. Meowser. I'll be using that whenever I get another dog. I'm going to name it Meowser.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Sounds great.
Hell yeah.
You're sticking to the M's, huh?
Yep.
I did that for a little bit. Ran through a few.
Billy walks the streets of Kingston Falls. He passes Dory's pub, where Mr. Futterman is complaining to Kate about the damn foreigners. You know, it's cold as ice. He continues his drunken rant about gremlins, looping in WW2 into his spiel. Because this was that time where he was like not old enough to be doddering, but old enough to be like, yeah, I fought in the motherfucking war. Mm-hmm. And be what's the term? Lucid about it. Yeah. Like not slip into something. Kate then convinces Mr. Futterman to walk home instead of driving home in his fucking plow machine.
So don't plow the snow, honey. Walk through it. You're going to be fine.
Then we cut to some carolers singing as Billy and Kate walk by. Kate is lecturing Billy on the way holidays can be hard for some people. Billy tries his hardest to bond with Kate. Doesn't succeed. She doesn't celebrate Christmas, Billy. A pair of young adults have arrived at Kate's house. Billy works up the courage and asks Kate out to a date on Thursday night. Kate says yes. And they go their separate ways. She goes home into her house and Billy walks on home. Then we cut over to Mr. Hansen, who is getting a needle and syringe ready to draw some blood from the Mogwai. Back to Billy, who is now in his room with Gizmo and the other Mogwai. The newly birthed Mogwai are begging for food. Billy looks at the clock. He still has time because it's like 10:30 or 11. It was still enough time. While he is away, the young Mogwai are conspiring while Billy is gone.
While Billy's away, the Mogwai will play.
That's when we're also like, what time did that bar close?
Sure.
Like you're now early. You're home eating a snack and you're like, it's not midnight yet.
No,
but we've
so
already
like,
closed up the old bar.
Areas of cold Midwesty bars, they all close at like 9 or 10. So
I have, if you go up to Greer and during the cold season, they do actually close around 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Cause no.
It's like 10, right? 9 or 10.
Something like that.
Where?
Like I know Wisconsin is something like that.
I think it just depends on the season. Like if it's a,
so not all there. Yeah. I've been to like Wisconsin during the winter. You go out to some of the, I haven't been out to the real rural parts. I've been out to like suburbs and the bars will still be open.
Yeah.
Cause
there's nothing else to do and it's cold.
Yes.
I think, but this is such a small town. It's probably their season that it's like they just like, that's how Greer is such a tiny town that when it's not their season, they close super early.
Sure.
Because there's nobody there. Nobody's staying at the hotel nearby. Nobody's doing, you know.
Yeah, Kate had probably been in there for the last 2 hours, and it had only been Mr. Futterman for the last 2 hours. She's like, no, I'm going home. Like, you're drunk. You don't get any more. I'm leaving. Nobody's come in. Like,
we've only seen a few people in town anyway. Yeah, although the school seems very large, and they have a scientist. You know, they're employing a professional scientist. So I don't know. There might be a few more people than we've seen.
While Billy is gone, the young Mogwai are conspiring. The plate of chicken that is so handily ready for them is devoured in seconds. Because, you know, I guess Lynn makes a whole chicken before she goes to bed and cuts it up into pieces just in case somebody's hungry.
That's what people did. They would have a lot of chicken and then they would eat it cold for lunch. They would pack it in their lunch.
I get that. All right.
Yeah.
Billy tries to give some to Gizmo, but he declines the offer. Should have been a clue, Billy. Back to Mr. Hansen at the school. The Mogwai in his possession is attempting to grab the teacher/scientist sandwich. It is well after midnight. Once Mr. Hansen has left the Mogwai alone, it munches on his sandwich. Meanwhile, Billy and Gizmo watch movies until they fall asleep.
Was it a sandwich or a hoagie?
Ooh.
Mm.
I'd like a hoagie.
Same thing, just different words. It is specific.
Hoagie's very specific.
Yeah, true. Because it is about the bread and like the way it's folded, right? Like how the meat is put into the sandwich, too.
Ask Dr.
Huxtable. Is that Mr. Brown talking or Mr. Braun talking?
Braun.
Braun. How dare you, sir?
When Billy wakes up, there are a bunch of scaly and slimy cocoons in his room. 5 to be exact. Billy doesn't know what happened. Lynn asks if he got water on them. No. Did you feed them after midnight? No. He fed them before midnight. He glances at his clock. It is still the same time from before. He finds the power cord. Uh-oh, it's been chewed through. At school, Pete, Billy, and Mr. Hansen are extracting the cocoon out of the cage.
Gremlins have a great concept of electricity, by the way. They know how to plugging and unplugging of items.
Yep. Mr. Hansen explains what's going on. The Mogwai are metamorphosizing at the Pelzer house. Lynn makes cookies when Rand calls. He is at a convention trying to sell his bathroom buddy. Steven Spielberg makes an appearance on a recumbent bicycle.
That scene has so many great things.
There was Josh pointed it out. Was this the scene with the time machine, or was it a different scene? Yeah, so they're
in the background is the James
H.G. Wells.
It's
the H.G. Wells time machine.
Jules Verne's.
Is it? I thought it was H.G. Wells' time machine.
Jules Verne's.
Okay.
Jules Verne's was the time machine guy. That's why the whole thing in Back to the Future is about Jules Verne's and how much they like him or whatever.
Okay.
So the Jules Verne's one is the one where he goes like through time and then he goes forward and all the way backwards or whatever. But they have like one of those there in the background. And then it's gone. Oh. Like it traveled, you know, kind of deal. And there's somebody like going like, where did it go? Yeah. Like it's that scene is probably the most interesting part of this movie, weirdly enough. Like it's just like, because there's so much going on, because it's like, I feel like that was a director fuckery, you know, where they're just like, let's have some fucking fun with this stupid shit.
Oh yeah. I mean, you had the movie theater and it had the E.T.'s working title up on the thing, and it's like, it's that weird thing. I didn't know that when I was a kid, but seeing it I was like, oh, I remember that, that's the working title for E.T. What was it, a boy and his testicle? Yes, that's
a boy and his extra testicle. They called him testicles.
Yeah, it's a fun scene. Like this is one of the fun scenes in the movie. Going on in the background?
Yeah. Because there wasn't a lot of Easter egg stuff. They weren't. Maybe a little bit. Like certain directors are probably like, hey, let's start fucking around. It was mostly about product placement back at this time.
Sure,
it's like I need a fucking can of this here, that there, blah blah blah, whatever. But this was just like, hey, this is a science convention. Let's get a fucking little weird on it.
Yeah.
You know, no one wrote that. I guarantee it was just like, here's a scene, but let's see what we can do in the background.
Well, it's funny because I never noticed Spielberg before because I was always looking at the weird guy with the sunglasses in the back trying to figure out if he was anybody. Sure. And then George was like, is that Spielberg? I think that was Spielberg who just rode by. And until we rewound it, I'm like, oh, and I hadn't read the trivia yet.
Yeah.
And I look up the sunglass guy, and no, he's just a guy who literally plays sunglass guy, roller skates guy. Like he's in a lot of stuff, but he never has a name. He's always like microphone man.
He's grade A extra. Yes. That's what he is. You know, they're like, you're not going to get lines, bro, but you're fucking front screen, dude. Yeah. Do what you want because you bring it.
Yes.
You bring it.
You're not
going to
get a name, but you will be noticed by what you are wearing. Because he really stood out. And he was on a lot of TV shows that I watched, but always just kind of a background guy, you know. I probably recognized him.
Oh, that'd be a great show.
Like, hey, there's that guy.
The background guy.
Background guy. Oh, yeah.
Because they did extras, and I liked it, but it's not good enough.
No, this is background guy.
Because Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, different style of comedy, for sure.
Background guy.
Well, either way, the cocoons upstairs in Billy's room begin to hatch. Rand makes no promises to be home in time for Christmas Eve. The cocoons split wider. Like, I like his, like, you know I can't promise to be home on Christmas Eve. I gotta be selling my wares and goods, baby.
Like, that guy has no job. Like, how are they surviving? Like,
the mom didn't either.
No, yeah. Back then, moms didn't have jobs.
I know, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I thought it was a little weird that maybe she should get a job.
He's like,
maybe
busiest
she should
night
have been the one
year.
Working at the bank.
Yeah, Christmas maybe. Eve, the busiest night of the year for him. You know?
Maybe it was Billy. Maybe Billy's the one who was really the breadwinner for the family, who's out there paying the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, Billy, you can't use that money for college like you planned.
Yep.
You got to pay the mortgage this year or else you know who's going to take the dog.
He's fucking face down in Miss Futterman's crotch. It's like fucking clam chowder.
Oh, come on. I like clam chowder. Don't ruin it for me.
With two big pieces of bacon.
At the bank, Mrs. Harris pleads with the bank manager to just speak to Mrs. Deagle, who just so happens to have walked in. She demands Billy deposit money into her account. She then asks after Barney, who then threatens him in absentia. Billy is not happy with her. At school, Mr. Hansen shows a film to his class, and the cocoon pulses with the rhythmic heartbeat of whatever is inside the cocoon here and in Billy's room. The cocoons have opened. Gizmo looks scared from under some type of helmet. Scaled, long, thin arms, wet with slime, emerge from the leathery cocoons. Mr. Hansen tries to catch the box before it falls off the countertop. He is too late. Or the cage, I should say. No, because he put a box over it, but he is too late. Either way, the bell rings, and Mr. Hansen now ushers all the kids out of his classroom. Yes, even you, Pete. Billy then receives an excited call from Mr. Hansen. So Billy rushes over and leaves his job at the bank. Back at the Pelchers, Gizmo looks on, terrified of what has become of the other Mogwai. Mr. Hansen, back in his classroom, calls out to the Mogwai. He tries to lure it out with a candy bar. The Mogwai scampers about the classroom until finally Mr. Hansen has it cornered. Mr. Hansen reaches his hand and arm under the desk. The Mogwai sounds interested, except instead of the candy, it grabs onto Mr. Hansen's arm, pulling him forward under the desk. Cut to Billy arriving to the school and then into the classroom, where the reel of film projector still spins, so you get that thwap, 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 thwap. Billy calls out for Mr. Hansen, but soon finds him face down and head under a desk with a syringe sticking out of his right buttocks. He did.
Butt drugs.
Yep. He doesn't know that. That's the thing. He doesn't even check.
I know.
He's not like, hey, maybe I should call 911 and make sure that this teacher is okay.
Yep.
I don't know what was in the syringe.
Nope.
Who knows?
Well,
nope. He just leaves him there.
Who's the first to die in movies sometimes?
That was very... very typical of this.
Yeah.
Well,
of
still
this
now
time.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still a trope. Yep.
It is.
So let me. I got a little something I was cooking up in my head right now.
Oh. Okay.
So do you think Mogwai only can replicate through the means of water on them? And if so, apparently they all come out to be assholes. But what do they maybe kill a bunch of them, or do they just fucking like beat them into submission to where they're Gizmo-esque?
What?
Okay, so...
Okay.
Are they always assholes and they make
Gizmo
nice?
Do they come out
nice
as assholes
by...
and then they have to like beat them into submission
so.
To be nice?
No.
Or is there a nice one every once in a while and then they fucking kill the rest?
Yeah.
You gotta think. This is fucking... These are Chinese creatures.
Sure.
They're Chinese creatures and...
Chinese chicken.
They're like... Maybe they're like, okay, these ones are going to the pot. This one seems okay.
Well, it
and then there's the Hannibal Lecter one. Like fucking.
I think this movie is put out there saying, okay, first, these Mogwai, they're cool, they're chill, but like they're all good. Like nothing evil happens, nothing comes from it if you don't, you know, no light, no water, no food. But it's because of the water that some portion of him was put off, and maybe those other Mogwai are more like emotionally based, where they have a tendency to be like
I mean,
anger or silly.
We haven't got to that part yet, but they do the facsimile.
Normally, because they're all bad.
Sure.
All bad except Gizmo.
Yeah, and that's the only example. Well,
do they like beat the shit out of him to where it's like they put him in the place of being this subservient, nice little being.
Yeah, I think they do. I don't think they kill him. I think if you make a batch of seven. Yeah.
And you're like, do you do it with all of them? And that's what they do all the time, and that's how they kind of spread these creatures out? Or do they just fucking like, they're like, these are the bad ones. We're fucked.
Maybe they have to be tamed. You know? Have to be tamed in order to be normal, and
they put them in a fucking pillow sack and twist it up.
And throw them in the river.
Start fucking, running through the woods, windmilling.
It's probably something that only people who know how to handle them are allowed to have them. That's why he didn't want to take it in the first place, because they don't know how to properly raise them
because maybe they're not like this, but once you let the second and third thing happen, then it just gets all out of control.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And the rest that come after that are nothing.
The first thing is sunlight. Like, you're fucked. That's
like, you gotta, you know, they're like, anything that comes but from saying, breaking the up the they, rules, like, you gotta kill.
That's what I'm saying. But the doctor is basically saying that they breed off of mitosis, whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just you're splitting your cells, like you're pretty That's, much
that would be mitosis.
Like it's cloning or whatever it is.
Yeah, like, it would be like a form of mitosis. So basically, one creature becomes more. Of course, doesn't change this one's fact. So basically, you got these other ones that come out, and they're sentient quick.
Yeah.
And they have their own personalities real quick. So is it like, these are the little parts of the one that are gone, or like I said, do they just like take all of them, spread them, you know?
Or do they have to be separated immediately and not, you know, to keep, maybe that's what makes them evil, is being around others like that.
Going to write a letter to Chris Columbus. Whoever thought up, it's going to be a written letter.
Get on your typewriter tonight.
No, handwritten.
Oh.
Yeah.
We go handwritten. I don't
know. Do you have good handwriting?
Yeah. Nope, it's terrible.
Okay, let's do
this. He's going to think a child wrote it.
Can you order a typewriter on the line?
Oh, easily, yeah.
Yeah, get a little typewriter.
I'll go find one somewhere.
Get a little travel typewriter with a little case, and then you can do it wherever you want.
Yeah, I want a naked lunch one that turns into a bug and talks to me. Love naked lunch. Anytime I can drop a naked lunch line, I will.
Write this letter, and if he gets back to you, you can bring it up at the next podcast.
I'm gonna find him and ask him these questions at like whatever, like if he ever goes to like a Comic-Con or whatever or anything.
Yeah.
We'll stalk him.
All right.
Not in a bad way. Just to ask these questions. That's it. But anyways, continue, sir. You're doing a great job. I love it.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
So now Billy decides that he's going to reach for the phone. Then a claw reaches out and scratches him. And then the claw hand grabs an apple, doesn't like it, then grabs a glass vial that it does like. And it's just crunching on some glass for fun. And before Billy can catch it, the Mogwai escapes by way of air duct. Billy rushes to the nurse's office to bandage his wound. When Billy leans his head back, we get our first full glimpse of the changed Mogwai. It throws bandages and other medical supplies before escaping into a closet. Back with Lynn, she hears noises from upstairs. Gizmo is attached to a dartboard while the other Mogwai throw darts at him. Lynn is very perplexed. She takes her carving knife with her to investigate upstairs. One of the Mogwai tosses Gizmo down the laundry chute. Lynn climbs the stairs to Billy's room. She sees the empty open cocoons. Billy calls to warn her, except some Mogwai has disconnected the hardline. Mysteriously, loud Christmas music begins to play from downstairs, drawing Lynn away from the attic room. Billy runs from the school. Downstairs, Lynn kills the music. Something throws glass at her. She heads from where it came from. There's a small shadow that creeps up behind her, disappearing when Lynn starts to turn towards it. In her kitchen, she spies a transformed Mogwai eating cookies. It is also the first good close-up shot. It's really good effects. Good practical effects.
Oh, they were great.
Yeah. It hears Lynn, but she hides, and it goes back to eating. When Lynn looks again, it is in the Peltzer food processor. She reaches over and turns it on, killing the Mogwai, dark green blood splattering all over the kitchen. Another throws plates at her. She stabs that one to death. And then another one behind her gets sprayed with flea and tick remover, backing it into her microwave. And then she turns on the microwave, exploding it like an overcooked hot dog. She hears more, which means she needs more knives. Grabbing two, she heads towards the other Mogwai. One looks to be in a stocking, only it wasn't, just a toy. One of the Mogwai leaps at her from the tree, attempting to bite her. Another one looks on from a nearby box. Billy arrives home just in time to rescue his mom. He cuts the head off of the attacking Mogwai. The leader, Stripe, leaps from its hiding place, blows his nose, and escapes into the dark, cold night. At Dr. Molinari's house, Billy and Lynn ask for respite. Billy heads to his house, where he finds Gizmo. Rand calls, but no one answers. Billy, with sword in hand and Gizmo in a backpack, they track Stripe to the YMCA. Once inside, the best friends find Stripe in the electrical box when Billy attempts to disable the fire alarm. Stripe then scratches Billy across the chest, causing Billy to fall prone.
Once again, they have knowledge of electrical systems that are beyond anything that is 2 days old.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is it inherent knowledge, you think?
Yes.
Yeah, it's got to be.
They're Chinese.
You know who had, I think Tesla had one, Nikolai.
A gremlin?
He had a gremlin. Yeah.
Did he?
That's who helped him build all his stuff.
Ooh.
He was like, hey, bud, what do you think about this? And I was like, freaking terrible.
It also came with a Howie.
No, he's got to have a Howie.
Got to have a Howie.
I don't know what a Howie is.
Howie Mandel.
Yeah, come on.
He's Gizmo.
He is. Yeah.
He's got a mustache and a fucking bald head now.
Yeah, he does.
I think he still does Gizmo every now and then. When he's trying to make people happy,
like holiday parties.
He used to always do Gizmo, like back. That was part of his act. Sometimes he'd throw in a like Gizmo voice.
Yes. Well, fucking Howie's World was half Gizmo speaking.
Mm-hmm. I didn't watch any of it, but I remember. I
watched Bobby's World. Bobby's World. Yeah, Bobby's
World. Bobby's.
Bobby's World was great. Yeah.
It was Bobby's World. Yes.
I had a crush on him, oddly. I don't like to talk about it, but I had a really big crush on him for a while.
Until his porn.
But I didn't watch any of his stuff really ever. Never been a big fan of watching his stuff.
I watched it. I know I've seen one or two of his stand-ups, like when he was popular.
No, my crush was later when after he went bald.
Yeah, he looks better bald.
Yeah, he does.
But Billy watches helplessly as Stripe leaps into the nearby pool. The large pool begins to boil violently. Poor Billy can only look on terrified before he escapes with Gizmo. As Billy exits through the front, shadows of all the newly birthed Mogwai storm the doors of the YMCA that leads to Kingston Falls. The sheriff doesn't believe Billy's story about gremlins, and a young Jonathan Banks is in the scene. Billy tries to convince the sheriff and deputy by showing them Gizmo. And if you don't know who Jonathan Banks is, his most famous character was Mike Ehrmantraut from Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like the only scene he had in this. He barely had a scene in the movie. Yeah, because I saw him, I'm like, oh my God, it's Mike.
Yep.
But his name was in the beginning. Like I saw his name in the beginning, and it didn't occur to me.
It now sticks with me. Like whenever I see that, I will be like, yes, I know who that is now.
I mean, it's not an A-lister kind of.
It's not. No.
Well, I know his name. I know his name, and when I see it, but it didn't occur to me because I wasn't expecting him in Gremlins.
Yes.
So that wasn't like you weren't when on I saw the name.
When you
I wasn't
saw, you didn't associate when you saw the name
until I saw him, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I did see his name in the opening credits.
Meanwhile, General Stripe leads his army of Gremlins through the streets of Kingston Falls. Mr. and Mrs. Sputterman are the first to be visited. Soon, their TV starts to go on the fritz because the Gremlins are playing on the antenna like playground equipment. Sputterman is going to go outside and check the antenna. He sees the bent and twisted antenna, but is distracted by noise from his garage. The Gremlins have stolen his plow truck. They drive it through his house. His paranoia proven real. Futterman screams about the Gremlins in his cab before the married couple are off-screen murdered. Now we are with the town preacher, who is dropping letters in the blue mailbox. The letters are spit out by the Gremlins. Anderson arrives to mail a last-minute package. He inspects the mailbox. It seems that he has been grabbed by the Gremlins in the mailbox. It's implied that his arm has torn off or dies. Stripe watches from a snowbank, which is a weird thing to do. Are they cold-blooded? Are they warm-blooded? Do they need warmth?
They're both. Yeah.
He's always keeping little Gizmo in some blankets, but the other ones don't seem to mind the cold.
Yeah. A gremlin messes with an electrical junction box again, to Josh's point. Yeah. How do they know to be fucking electrical with this
engineers,
shit?
All of them.
Yeah. And they're wreaking havoc with traffic signals. Back with Billy, Gizmo doesn't like the sheriff touching him. Gizmo is waving a small USA flag. This is so funny. I'm
like, fucking about to turn my fucking Facebook blue or black or whatever. Black. Black's the one. Yeah.
Billy explains about the pupil stage along with the water effect. A call comes in about the Futterman house. Billy is left alone while a phone rings. Stripe has found Mrs. Deagle's residence. Inside, she descends her stairs in a stair chair elevator. She feeds her cats, who are howling and hissing all over the place. And little Stripe enters through a cat door.
There has never been not comedy when one of those chairs are involved. Yes. Never.
It's true.
Never.
It is never threatening. Like, it's nobody, not a threat. Nobody threatens you descends that stair chair elevator. Like,
you just wait there at the bottom until I get there.
You're just like expecting something. You're just like, okay, plot device is coming. Let's do this. How are we doing it, though? What are we doing? What was
they're getting
on?
Launched out the front door, or they're getting launched out the second floor landing window?
Something terrible is going to happen.
So after Stripe enters through the cat door, Mrs. Deagle hears some sounds of carolers outside her front door. She doesn't like it, so she grabs her pitcher of water to throw at them.
So cute.
Opens the door, only to realize that the carolers are a bunch of gremlins. Inside, Stripe messes with her stair chair elevator. Panicked Mrs. Deagle takes her stair chair elevator to her upper floor. Well, it takes her there, and then some. From outside, we see Mrs. Deagle rocket out of a second-story front window, landing in the street in front of the sheriff and deputy.
Was she on fire, too?
No, she wasn't on fire. A gremlin messes with the brake line of the sheriff's car. Dave Mars is attacked by gremlins as he is dressed as Santa Claus.
I don't like that. This is all red.
Yep. The sheriff cannot believe what he is seeing, and the deputy really wants to go. So they leave. Pete fights gremlins from his window with a slingshot. The deputy freaks out as the sheriff continues driving back to the station. The sheriff then slams the brakes, trying to avoid a collision with the truck that pulled out in front of him. The sheriff's car overturns drastically when it collides with the truck. That truck then careens into a nearby storefront. A gremlin cackles. Billy and Gizmo get into his bug, and it starts miraculously.
Because they never do.
Yep.
Movies, real life.
Yep. And on the radio, Pete has made it. Yeah, Pete ends up calling Rockin' Ricky, and he starts telling him about the gremlins, and Ricky thinks he's being pranked. However, breaking glass can be heard over the radio as gremlins attack Rockin' Ricky. And then we cut to a mobile gas station where Rand can't get through to his family. And true to Rand, he tries selling the attendant a Pelzer smokeless ashtray. Back in Kingston Falls, gremlins are hanging from the ceiling fans and rafters of Dory's Pub. Kate is serving them drinks while they sing, smoke, throw food, expose their privates to Kate.
2 days old. They're literally 4 hours old. Serving. She didn't ID any of them.
Nope. Swilling beer from the tap. Playing like a game of golf bowling. They're playing poker where Stripe shoots a cheater. Then they listen to some blues on a boombox. They play hand puppets, jazzercise. One shocks itself in a lamp socket. I think it's just a whole fucking scene.
Yeah, it's just mischief everywhere.
Yeah.
Eventually, Kate finds out that they are sensitive to light, which she uses to escape from the pub. Before she did, she sets a ceiling fan on high. And the gremlin on that fan gets thrown into a neon beer sign. Blocking her way is a gremlin in a ski mask trying to hold her up.
The outfits are the best, though. Yeah. That's like by far. It's like, dress these motherfuckers up. That's what you gotta do if you want to entertain me.
Yeah. Luckily, Billy arrives, his headlights saving her from the gremlin. She gets in his car. Now the car won't start, so they run for it. The whole town is overrun with gremlins. The lights flick on and off in every house, business, street, everywhere. Billy, Kate, and Gizmo make it to the bank.
Electricity. They got it.
Yep. Kate reveals that on Christmas, when she was 9, her father went missing. And some days later, Kate found her dad stuck in the chimney. He slipped and broke his neck. Worst part was that he was dressed as Santa with an arm full of presents. Fucking grim, man. Rand leaves the mobile station with some oil cans, a couple of cartons of Camels. Billy, Gizmo, and Kate step out into an eerie, eerily silent Kingston Falls. When Kate asks where all the gremlins went, Billy guesses that the gremlins went somewhere dark, as soon it will be light outside. Evidence leads them to the town theater. Now, Billy spies one at the concession stand. Inside, all the gremlins have decided to watch Snope, Wit, and the Zeebin Little People. Billy wants to go to the boiler room, located behind the movie screen, while the gremlins are distracted. Stripe leaves the theater to go get candy. Billy, Kate, and Gizmo in the boiler room release natural gas, which is then followed by Billy lighting a rag and throwing it down there. The three are spotted by the gremlins behind the movie screen when the film stops. The mob of gremlins begin to swarm them. Escaping out the back exit, Billy barricades the door, preventing the mob of gremlins from following. Very soon after, the theater explodes. All the gremlins are taken care of, except one in particular. Stripe.
That guy, dude. Annoying.
Yep. The gremlin sees the explosion, then Billy, Kate, and Gizmo, and it retreats inside the department store. The three companions follow after. Billy has Kate and Gizmo go look for a light switch or some other way to turn on the lights. Before he leaves, they kiss.
Gizmo does not know about electricity.
Nope. While tracking Stripe, Billy smashes a CRT TV when Stripe appears on the screen. He then appears on a wall of CRT TVs. Kate and Gizmo find the lighting control for the department store. In the toy section, Billy is spied on by Stripe. Was that the whole ET thing? Yeah, and like, as Billy's walking by, he got the things in the background and then the stuffed toys and pushes his head out. In the home improvement section, Stripe attacks Billy with saw blades for a circular saw, or also known as a rip saw. Stripe rides a tricycle to his next destination. I now know where saw got its inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
In the control room, Kate notices Gizmo is missing. Gizmo is army crawling somewhere. In the sporting section, Billy is attacked again. This time, he is attacked with a baseball pitching machine.
Balls to the face.
Yep. Balls to the face.
Mm.
And in the bedroom section, Gizmo finds a skylight. Oh, no. It's the garden section. He sees in the garden section those skylights. Back in the sporting section, Stripe shoots Billy in the arm with a hand crossbow. He gets to roll 5d6 because he was hiding.
That's how much the damage is.
Yep. Billy defends himself with a boombox. And Stripe, having found a chainsaw, now attacks Billy, who decides that his best weapon of defense is a wooden baseball bat.
Yes.
Because
wood beats chainsaw.
Every day. In the toy section, Gizmo has found a Barbie car that he uses to go find Billy. Back in the sporting section, Billy's still defending himself. In the lighting control room, Kate pries the cover off of the fuse box. She switches on the department store lights. Stripe is blinded as the chainsaw carries the gremlin away. Unfortunately, he ends up near a fountain. Stripe has also found a pair of revolvers.
What department store doesn't have a live fountain?
Yeah.
That was the home goods.
That was the garden section. Yeah. Rand and Barney arrive to Kingston Falls. And over the car radio, we find out that Rockin' Ricky's still alive. And he announces that the Marines are on standby with fire hoses. Because this is the best thing.
Yeah.
Barney jumps from Rand's car as they pass the department store. Rand follows after the dog. Gizmo, still driving his car, finds Barney in the department store. Gizmo drives off. And Barney, I guess, follows the dog? Why? I don't know. Don't see Barney again anytime soon. Billy in the garden section looks for Stripe. He spots the gremlin on the second tier of the fountain. Billy, die! Growls Stripe. He shoots at Billy, but he dodges the fired rounds. Gizmo flies around a corner, headed for the garden section. Stripe sticks his claw onto the top tier of the fountain. The gremlin's back begins to bubble. Gizmo, using a snow shovel as a ramp, flies over the fountain into a shelf of bushes. Stripe threatens to shoot Gizmo, but before that can happen, Gizmo pulls on the strings of the garden skylight, casting the morning rays of sun onto Stripe. Stripe now thrashes about until the gremlin has been reduced to nothing but a ragged mess of a gremlin.
A melty, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Very a fucking...
Bubbly boobler.
Yep.
He was
very Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah. Melty. Yeah, very true. But he falls dead into the fountain. Billy hears some noises from where Stripe has fallen into the fountain. Red light pulsating in the water. The remains of Stripe explode from the water fountain. The remains melt into a pile of green goo. We cut to the Peltzer house where Lou Landers from WDHB Action Central News reports about the riots in the town of Kingston Falls. The officials are blaming the events on mass hysteria. Rand shakes his head in disbelief. Lou explains a little more about who Mrs. Deagle was. She was the widow of Donald Deagle, a convicted stock swindler. No one's going to miss her. In fact, she was the only death in this entire thing that happened.
No, they killed the black guy.
Well, they don't report that at all.
They're like gang violence.
I thought they reported, they're like, yeah, the only death was Mrs. Deagle.
Well, that means everybody else survived.
Maybe they purposely did not want to talk about Mr.
Hanson. It's a cover-up here, yeah.
There may have been a cover-up.
Yep, this is PETA. It's a PETA cover-up.
But no one's going to miss Miss Deagle. Kate tells Gizmo not to eat the thermometer. Lynn is going to bring Gizmo chicken soup when, out of nowhere, Mr. Wing has shown up.
Everybody knows you're supposed to put a thermometer up an animal's ass, not its mouth.
No,
that's right.
Yes. That's where he fucked up.
Uh-huh. Mr. Wing has shown up, and he came out of nowhere. And he's here to take Gizmo back from the Peltzers. Mr. Wing is mad that Gizmo watches TV. He wags his finger at Rand, telling him that what he said back in the shop. Mogwai comes with much responsibility. Mr. Wing advises the family that they are not ready to handle that responsibility. Gizmo gets to say goodbye to Billy. Before Mr. Wing does, Rand tries to give him the smokeless ashtray. Mr. Wing accepts the gift. After explaining that a man at a gas station tried to sell him one, he is pleased with this gift. Rand narrates that if you experience malfunctions in your house, turn on the lights, check the cupboards before you call the repairman, because it just might be gremlins. Roll credits.
The end.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they...
Fun fact, Hoyt Axton, the father,
mm-hmm.
I always knew him as, you know, I knew he was a singer at some point. I didn't listen to his music. I knew him from a lot of TV shows when I was growing up. He was always a guest star on, like, Different Strokes and things like that when I was a kid.
Okay.
He wrote Joy to the World by Three Dog Night. Joy to the world, all the boys and girls. Joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea. Joy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And his mother was also a singer or a songwriter. Singer songwriter. She wrote Heartbreak Hotel for Elvis.
Oh wow! Wow.
Quite the musical little family there.
Just, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of forgot about him until I watched this again, because I remembered him from my childhood, but I didn't really remember a whole lot about him. I did know he was a music guy. I think he probably sang on one or two of the shows I saw him on. Like, I remember him with a guitar, but I did not know that.
Yeah, I had no idea.
That's interesting.
I had no idea. I only knew him from here. Yeah. Although I have sang that song.
Yeah.
I went to Catholic school. They made everybody sing it.
It was a popular song.
Sure.
We never sang that song in a Catholic school.
I did.
I think you might be thinking of different songs.
No.
Well, they did the song, like the Joy to the World.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All keep it going. The boys and girls. But that was like a popular
Joy
song.
To the World.
I don't think we did that song. Maybe
Joy to you, man.
We could do some pop songs in music.
Joy
class.
To the fishes and the magwais.
Yeah. There was that part.
Well, Megs, I know this wasn't your movie, but what?
It was like, all of our movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't think what? I chose this. Oh,
it was
liar.
Our movie for the baby Jesus.
I didn't choose this for the baby Jesus, okay?
No.
You
for the, for Jesus. The For the darkest night of the year, that's what I chose it for.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. I still love it.
I
think
agree.
It holds up. It has. I think the effects are great.
Yes.
I, of course, you know, I don't like the AI stuff. I think that the practical effects are so much better,
CG,
so much more
not
real.
AI.
I don't know what they call it.
I'm
I don't
fucking
like
just
it.
Said it.
Okay,
so,
CG,
yeah.
I don't like it. I like practical effects. I think it still holds up after all these years.
Yeah, yeah.
There are certain movies that came out in the 1980s that you can still watch today. And, of course, the outfits are dated and... some of the music or they don't have cell phones, whatever, but everything else looks really good.
Yeah.
This movie looks great.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Great movie.
Yeah. What would you rate this movie?
I'm giving it a 5.
Yeah, you give I'm giving it just straight five.
I am giving it five. God, there's so many things to choose from. I'm giving it five Polaroids.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. All right.
Nice. Polaroid cameras. They all can right. kill a gremlin, and they can keep a picture of it forever.
What about you, Trevor? What do you got?
Oh, I love this movie. Like, okay, I'm going to walk that back a little bit. Like, I don't love this movie. Like, I don't watch it all the time. Like, it's not in my repertoire of, like, repeat throughout a year. But it's still a good movie. It held up. Like, it was fun. It was cool to watch, and it was like, yeah, like, good job at making some fun out of this little light horror movie. This is a movie that if it was on something and I was like, okay, I just need to throw something on, I'm going to throw that on. If I'm reading a module for the next game I'm going to be DMing or gamekeeping, throw that on in the background as I'm getting ready. Like, yeah, I definitely throw this on again. I'm probably going to end up watching Gremlins 2. Oh. I haven't done it yet.
You've never seen it?
No, I've seen it. Oh, okay. I've seen it. I'm just going to watch it again because it's been about just as long as I've seen Gremlins to see Gremlins 2. I'm going to give this five snowplows.
Like, awesome.
Five of five snowplows. Like, I can't find a fault. Like, it's good. It's good. Maybe I'm biased. Maybe I'm biased, but I really enjoyed it. I think everybody should watch this movie at least once. Mm-hmm. At least once. Mm-hmm. Josh, yourself?
Okay, so against popular opinion,
ooh,
I'm going to give this two.
Okay.
Broken, dead Mrs. Dingles in the road.
What?
Mrs. Deagles, sorry.
Okay.
Here's my reasoning.
Fair enough.
Yeah, here's my reasoning. I hate the rule system they have. It's fucking stupid. There's nothing. Like, listen, I know. Don't take it literally. I take it literally because that's how it is. It's jumbled, in my opinion. Like, there's no, like, it's like, oh, here we go. This is this. I think the only thing I really liked was how they add the dark story with Phoebe Cates. They're like,
yes.
That I'm like, that's cool, especially for this time. The Mogwais are cute, yeah, but it's fucking obvious. It's not fucking hard to fucking do that.
No.
Like I said, there's a lot of. Like I said, my logical brain, which I work with a lot, you know, I hang out with it. It goes like, this is stupid because none of it really makes sense. So I'll say this, though. And this is probably very against popular opinion. I enjoy the second one more because of the containment of it all. You know what I mean? Because
it's all in one building?
They're all in one building. But like you had better acting in general, in my opinion. And you also had some rehashing. They brought back the couple, like, what's his name? The snowplow guy.
Mm-hmm. They brought back
the Futtermans. Yeah, that's why you said off camera.
Yeah.
And you still got that dark story of stuff where she, like, and they made jokes out of it. It was more Christmassy / fun / everything for me of the second one. This one is, it's good. I just can't, like, watching it again now, I'm just like, why did they do this? Why did they do that? Like, I was questioning stuff. I don't know why, but I did. And I didn't go into it looking at that because I was like, oh, I love Gremlins. Let's watch this movie. I'm ready for it.
Yeah, for sure.
But like, when I watched it, I was like, why?
Because you're contrary.
Because I'm an asshole.
Well, yeah, nostalgia.
It's not about nostalgia. Like I said, it's like, Gizmo's great. Like, the dad's great. That's the one thing that was missing from the second one is the dad. You need the dad.
Yeah.
Because he's just this, like, off-the-wall fucking guy. But it's good. It's a good Christmas movie. I don't know. Just, like, watching it again, for me personally, it didn't hold up.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It just, like, it wasn't what I remembered. I don't know. Like, it's...
Sure.
It was weird. Yeah. And I didn't expect that to happen. I honestly didn't. I wasn't going into it going like, I'm going to fucking neg this shit. Like, I'm going to fucking neg you. Not at all. Not even thinking about that. But it was like, oh, fuck, man. This is everything I'm watching. I'm like, there's these little cool parts that I thought were really cool when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm watching when I'm like him, like you said, him in the little fucking Barbie car and like little things. Like you said, there's a lot of things that transcend, like the tricycle, and that's how fucking, you know, that part happened, which is just fucking weird in general.
Sure.
But I'm just like, it's not what I remember. It doesn't hold up in a certain way. I think because there's certain Christmas movies that have gotten better that have held all that same thing, that maybe my standard is sorry, got up a little bit.
That's okay. That happens.
But I don't have standards, honestly, so, but it doesn't matter, But that's it. Yeah, two. That's a two for me now. Like, it probably would have been a four, but for some reason, I pulled it apart in my head. I don't know why.
Okay. It's your opinion. Yeah. It's art. It was made to,
probably
either,
no
to be
Jews
enjoyed.
There,
or...
No one mentions the Hanukkah. There's the 8-9. No, I'm just kidding.
I didn't see any house with blue lights in that town.
Yeah, no blue lights, man. Yeah. They're like, you aren't welcome here. Yeah. You ain't. But yeah, like I said, very unexpected. But I was watching and I was like, what the fuck is this? What, like, it just, like, it turned that way for me to where I was constantly, like, thinking that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All good.
Maybe if they discussed what we talked about, like, the whole, like, gave you a little bit of a nugget of, like, well, this is what happens here. You know, don't pour water on it because...
Yeah, a little
bit
more.
You know what
more,
I mean? It's three very background. Loose rules.
I don't want any of that. I want it to just be a nice little fantasy movie that I watched and I enjoyed.
Well, yeah, I get that.
I don't
want to
delve
into
it.
I love delving, though. I'm a delver. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those were our final reactions and our ratings for this movie.
I'll say this, though. If you haven't watched Gremlins, you need to watch Gremlins. Yeah, that's the thing. If you're, for some reason, you're listening to us talk about it instead of seeing the movie, which is asinine,
yes,
you should have watched Gremlins before, and you need to watch Gremlins if you haven't, because it is enjoyable. Like I said, I'm just fucking crazy because I've watched these movies 75 times in my life, and for some reason, I sat down and I picked it apart.
Yeah.
And I had no intention of doing that, which is whatever, but... Yeah.
Perspectives change.
Oh, I do need to say one thing. Change. Phoebe Cates, we're talking about, she puts her boobs out in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and everybody needs to know that.
Yeah.
The great boobs. It's a good job.
Great boobs. Yeah,
good
great
job,
boobs.
Phoebe. Good
Phoebe
boobs.
Cates. Matt, great, well, yeah.
Best
thank
boobs.
Her parents.
I
like,
think
her
you
parents
were,
are responsible for that. Like.
I will say this. Her depiction of the dark stories and her boobs are on point on each side, so... You're a good actress, and you got a good boob, so yeah, great job. Especially for someone with such a strange name.
Phoebe?
Phoebe Kate? That's not very common anymore, I don't think, is it? The Phoebe name?
No.
When's the last time you met a Phoebe in person?
I've never met a Phoebe in person. No.
What about you?
I don't know. Yeah, I did meet a Phoebe. She moved away.
Oh.
Yeah, her name was Phoebe.
Probably sent her back to Phoebe.
She did not
land.
Look like a Phoebe. I was shocked that her name was Phoebe.
Sure.
And the spelling is just
she's
like
very butch. Very butch girl.
Okay.
A straight.
Oh, they probably sent her one of those camps to try to turn her back.
No, she was straight, but she was very butch.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
No, she's married to a guy.
But yeah.
Her
that's
name was Phoebe.
My
Yeah, those were our reactions, ratings, and And if you want to, go check it out. You should. It's a good time.
Good times. Not the show.
No.
Not the show.
Now we'll come to our next segment, which is the choice for Megs, but she had already stated
earlier.
I've
already announced it. I've given my big announcement early tonight.
It was Dr. No. It's no longer on Prime. That ended in November. I found out the hard way. But... You would be able to rent them on Amazon, probably YouTube, Google, Roku, other platforms.
Apparently, there's a Fandango at home now, which is
what?
As well.
Oh,
Fandango has a streaming service. I guess.
Okay,
that might be what happened. They bought the bond contract or something like that. But that's interesting.
I'm gonna look into that. Or now
it's
Fandango.
It's the exact same price as Amazon too. So
okay, all right.
That's a weird one.
Fascinating.
But yeah, this is 1963.
This is from what I from
this is the first original, one? Correct? Yeah. Yeah, you got Ursula Andress.
Don't know her.
What?
Don't know her. Like
a great name, Honey Rider.
Ooh.
Jack Lord is Phoenix Leiter.
Felix.
Julius, no, the main guy is Jack? Joseph Wiseman.
Jack Lord? Is that? No, I was thinking of Van. Who am I thinking of?
Jack Lord was from like a ton of shit, ton of fucking TV in the 60s. And
I was thinking Curly's Gold.
Earlier.
That's Jack
Vance. No, that's Jack Palance.
Palance.
A lot of ladies, dude. A lot of good stuff in here. Dr. No's good.
All right. Well, I'm excited. I've not seen it. This will be the...
Yeah.
One of the rare ones where I have not seen this movie.
You
might have seen
something of it. You just don't remember.
I've probably seen clips.
Almost always like that. You're like, what's going on here? Like the whole setup sometimes because...
Does Dr. No look like Micah Myers from Austin Powers?
No.
Dr. Evil?
I don't think so.
Okay. It would be pretty cool if he did.
No, he's got hair.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm excited to watch it.
Dr. No.
I get to go in fucking... No, like I get, yeah. I have zero expectations. I'm about to be surprised.
Here we go.
And I am intrigued.
Niche.
Well, now that we've got that out of the way, comes to our, I think our favorite segment. Give me the juice. What are we watching? What are we reading? What are we excited for? Or something new? I don't know. Megs.
Gosh, I just finished Only Murders in the Building.
Okay.
It took me a long time to finally really get back into it after I started it
right.
back in the day.
Okay. Wasn't it?
It's good. Pretty good. Damn good. This wasn't my favorite season. I mean, I liked the first season more.
Yeah.
I think it started getting a little out there, but it was fun to watch, and I enjoyed it. Now I'm probably going to start something new, but okay. I'm not sure yet.
All right.
Josh and I were talking earlier. We're looking forward to the new Pamela Anderson movie.
I heard about that.
It's getting some
Showgirl.
The last Showgirl. It looks really good. I watched a preview for it the other night, and it looks good.
And I like that because she's had such a strange career life, you know. Like, nothing she did was good. But, whatever. You can't say it
Barbed
was.
Barbed Wire?
Barbed Wire is terrible. She did that other thing, and then Baywatch and... She did Tommy. You know?
Yeah.
That was probably the best thing she did, honestly. But, like, for her to come out and, like, she's up there with, like, there's some people in this movie. Like, and they, I mean, I don't know how the casting went, but it's like for you to go, like, Pamela Anderson, yeah. I want you to be this showgirl. Like, that's something. And then people like it. So,
She's winning awards. She's getting all kinds of accolades.
Yep. We love accolades.
We like accolades. Who doesn't like accolades?
The people, Amish community.
People at the Nuremberg trials.
They definitely won.
They're like, all right, we're going to do numbers today. No, let's not do this today. But can we do this tomorrow? I'm sleepy right now. I don't need to hear the numbers of the Jews we killed and stuff. So we could not do that.
Yeah, well, they didn't. They went ahead and did it anyway.
Yep.
How about you, Josh?
So I have a couple things. One, I can't remember the name of it.
Okay.
But it was interesting. No, it was something about Tanabana. It was like Tales of City or something of Tanabana. Let me hold on 1 second.
Okay.
But it was a very strange show. Like foreign language. Could have been any of the three I'm thinking of. Japanese, Chinese, or Korean. I don't think it was Korean. I didn't really put a lot of attention to it. But show is super interesting. It was in a tiny nutshell. There's people that can create these little balls of energy that when they hit something, it completely is removed from reality. So you had like a murder that happened, and then it was like like kids in a college, and they're like trying to find out where this happened, and it keeps unbundling. It's like an unbundling story where there's more and more and more and more and more and more. At the end of it, you're just like, I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I kind of enjoyed it. So that was that for me. And I'm watching an anime right now that I've watched before, but it's a classic. It's called English. It's called Fighting Spirit, but it's Hajime no Ippo. And it's like it's a boxing like kind of show.
Oh,
early manga. This is an old manga.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's super cool because it's like if you like, I don't know if I've said this before on this podcast, but if you want to watch anything to actually inspire yourself, I'm telling you, watch. It can't be dubbed; it has to be subtitled. Watch subtitled Japanese sports. The energy really? They have, there's like it's a whole different level of everything. Like you know, like, hey, let's get the team together, let's go, you know, and you got one jackass that's fucking getting all crazy. Over there, it's like all of them are plugged in and they're okay. ready to roll, you know, like whatever it is, ping pong, fucking like whatever sport you could possibly name, like high energy. When it comes to the anime, I don't know how it is in real life over there. I've never been there. I will be there eventually, but... But it's a really cool one because it's like there's elements of family, there's this, there's that, and it's also about like I'm on top of the world and I got fucked up and I got beat up, and then in the bounce back of it all, like a Rocky-esque story, like to a point, but he's not the Rocky.
Okay.
So it's really cool. Like Hapa no Jimo, it's called like Fighting Spirit, but there's about in general I want to say about 140 episodes of it.
Ooh, whoa,
and maybe a movie, but it's I've only watched like part of the first because it's sectioned off, but
sure.
But it's I watched it a long time ago, but I'm literally watching it at the end because it's something I enjoy. It's good stuff. So
nice. Very cool. Very cool. I've been watching a show called The Agency. It's Michael Fassbender, Jeffrey Wright. It's on Showtime. If you have a subscription to Paramount Plus, you would be able to watch it, but it's pretty cool. It's spy thriller stuff. It's pretty cool. I've been enjoying it. And then the fifth book in the Stormlight Archive, Wind and Truth, came out. So it's like 1400 pages long, so I'm trying to do like a chapter or
who's
two,
that
like
Sanderson?
A day. Yep, yeah, Brian Sanderson. Yeah. Yeah. But it's fun. Like it's pretty cool. Like it's good stuff.
Brian Sanderson, I would say, is your kind of your modern day Tolkien to a point.
Yeah.
Makes big worlds, does a lot of stuff.
Yep. And isn't a George R.R. Martin about it?
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is he actually works and continues to put out
massive novels. He continues to put out massive 1300.
No, like, not even seven. Well,
13 on the last one? Wow.
14. Okay. Like 13, 1400. Yeah,
this guy
on the last
fucking
one.
Writes.
Like, they're
he's,
epic
he's
stuff.
A crazy yeah. guy, dude.
And his smallest may have been like 1,000, maybe 1,100 pages in what this series is. He does write novels and shorter books. But this is an epic that he's telling, so they're fucking epic. Like 1,000 pages long to 1,400 pages long. But that's what we've been juicing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Normally we would let Josh read reviews, but we do not have any, so there's nothing for you to read, Josh. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, thank you for listening. I'm Trevor. You can follow us on Instagram at the Amateur Movie Review Hour. You can email us. Let me know where I'm wrong. Or maybe you have a genre or a theme for something that you want us to review. Or maybe just want to answer a question that we asked. You can email us at theamateurmoviereviewhour@gmail.com. And you can also go and check out our latest episodes that we have released on our website at theamateurmoviereviewhour.com. Yeah, like I said, I'm Trevor. Thanks for listening, and check you later.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.